Corrine Brown tells the Duval County Schools to put the brakes on some controversial changes. Taxi companies in Florida step up their war against Uber and Lyft. And some progress in clearing up this area's rape kit backlog, so says the state attorney. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. And now, catch the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. Then later, famed Iditarod musher Jason Mackey visits the beaches. We'll tell you why. Plus, comedian Bobcat Goldthwait here in studio. You won't want to miss that. All of that ahead this hour. But first, it's Friday, time for our weekly roundtable. And here today, we're pleased to welcome back Tanya Weathersby, columnist with the Florida Times Union. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Matt Shaw is here, editor at Folio Weekly.
Hi, Melissa.
And A.G. Gankarski, who writes for Florida Politics.
Morning.
Great to see all three of you, and plenty of news from the week to discuss, from the war between the state's taxi companies and ride-sharing apps like Uber, to a federal grant coming through that will help in the processing of thousands of local rape kits. But first this morning, in a major political power play, Congresswoman Corrine Brown made her voice heard at a Duval County School Board workshop this week. Brown and others are objecting loudly to proposals to change school district boundaries around Jacksonville. Now, Superintendent Nicolae Vitti recently proposed revamping some under-enrolled schools for the next school year. The changes are designed to increase school choice for parents and boost enrollment in Duval County. Congresswoman Brown, though, is saying there will be lawsuits over this. There's a lot to discuss here. Get on the line with your thoughts at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Tanya Weathersby, let's begin with you. I don't think they were expecting Corrine Brown to drop in on the meeting, but she did and objected to these plans.
I don't think they were expecting for Corrine to come in, but to drop in that meeting, and that was probably a real surprise for a lot of people. But on one level, it's really not a surprise because that community, you know, Corrine is obviously a product of the community that's being affected by the boundary changes. And you have to really be able to understand some of the history behind some of the objections. The North Side, Northwest Jacksonville, all of those schools have been the subject of experimentation for many decades, starting with integration, starting with a lot of things that were supposed to make the schools and the education better, starting with making Stanton a magnet school and changing a lot of schools. And what happened in many instances was when the school's missions was changed, the whole character of the community changed. So people in Northwest Jacksonville especially, even though the schools are underutilized, are very, very sensitive to that. And that's what you saw when she came there. So it's not something you can just do without understanding that history, even though Dr. Vitti is in a tough spot because they are underutilized.
Right. And it's 549-2937 to join the show. A.G. Gankarski, you were at this workshop. Corrine Brown telling Vitti and the school board that the neighborhood schools are so important to the community's identity. What about her argument and what about the district's position?
Okay, well, you know, Corrine Brown proved yet again that she's the best politician in the region. You got to consider what the school board did. A week before, they had approved this plan 6-0. This workshop was intended to just work out some issues, discuss it. They actually had two people on the school board trying to expedite the timetable. Corrine Brown comes in a few minutes after the meeting starts. She sat down by me and we're talking a little bit. And then eventually they let her talk. And she said, I'm not happy. And the community's not happy. I'm threatening a lawsuit if this went through. So, of course, they're pushing back the timetable, it looks like. More time for community feedback and so forth. Now, the issue is one of utility. Specifically, Jackson High School, one that would be turned into a magnet, has 52% utilization rate. That's not good. Those students would be put into the reins and rebar feeder patterns. The elementary schools, the middle schools would be realigned too. And there's some other realignments that we haven't discussed yet. So the school board is looking at it as they've got to use these resources. They were talking about getting a new building at Rebalt if the business community would buy in if this plan went through. And we'll see what happens there. But, you know, pushing this back may imperil grant money. It may imperil other things. So it's going to be interesting to see how Corrine Brown, how her gambit actually affects the school district. district.
And Matt Shaw, let's talk about some of the changes VD wants. He wants to make a new magnet or a specialized school for Andrew Jackson High, Wolfson High, Ed White High will become a military school. A. Philip Randolph High will become a vocational trade school, for example. These are just some of the changes that Nicolae Vidi is talking about making. The whole idea is to stem the tide of parents taking their kids out of public schools in Duval and putting them in charter schools or moving to places like St. John's County.
Sure. There's it's an ambitious plan, and there's plenty of points that have a ton of merit in the plan. I think with what you saw with the meeting, I think what Corrine Brown is representing is that they don't, or they haven't considered maybe getting the community buy-in with those communities on the north side of Jacksonville. So I think the plan, there's a lot to work out, as AG pointed out, but unless you have that community buy-in, I think we're going to be stuck here for a little
right.
while.
Right. And Tanya Weathersby, as you pointed out, that's a song we've heard before in Jacksonville. That's why the feelings are so raw around this, right?
We have a real trust issue. We have a real trust issue with that, because what has happened in the past is that a lot of changes have been made, and the community hasn't, people in the community feel that the changes have not benefited the community, that a lot of the very top students left. A lot of the traditional schools begin to deteriorate. A lot of changes were made at the expense of Northside communities. And there's another thing that's going on here as well. When you talk about the identity of the community being tied into the schools, that's also tied into this whole issue about economics. A lot of people are leaving the area because there aren't enough jobs. People, when the families stay in areas, that helps to enrich the schools. So all of those things are tied into so many other issues that are a lot more complex. And unfortunately, the schools can't fix all those issues. So Dr. Vidi is in kind of he has a predicament on his hands with that, because he's here at a time when there's a lot of history, there's a lot of mistrust, and I don't really know what you do about that except try to have more community input. But at the end of the day, the school board has to accomplish their mission too, which is to make sure those schools are used and the taxpayers' money is being used to the best, you know, of its ability. To generate the best outcomes in the students. If the students are leaving, and then we're not getting the best outcome there.
We'll go to your calls with our Friday Media Roundtable. Give us a call with your thoughts on the top stories of the week, 549-2937. So, Matt and AG, what happens when an irresistible force, Corrine Brown, meets an immovable object, Nicolae Vidi, two strong personalities, two fascinating characters with agendas. Well, it's interesting to see, and obviously both of these people are working with what they consider to be the best interests of the students in the city. But what about this?
Basically, what happens is you got to look at performance-based metrics too. Duval County is lagging behind the other top seven or big seven districts in the state. That's something that Dr. Vidi got to. The fact is that the urban core schools are underused. They're losing to charter schools. They've got capacity for 150,000 students. They've got 115,000 students in the schools. I mean, that's why the shuffling keeps happening. What Tanya was saying about what's happening in the community over the last few decades, basically since consolidation, you've seen a gradual bleeding out of jobs, bleeding out of other things, resources to these communities. So, you know, Dr. Vidi is coming in with a few years' experience in Duval County and, you know, trying to basically social engineer something that has been decades, even centuries in the making. It's difficult.
And here's a guy who's on what obviously is a short timetable. Most superintendents stay 3 to 5, 7 years at the most, Matt Shaw. He's trying to cram a lot of change into a short window of time.
Sure. And I think the perception is that he's moving forward without community input. And I think you saw that in the meeting the other night. And he's sort of viewed still as an outsider, though he's been here for a little while. So,
Tanya, what about that? Because on the one hand, Nicolae Vidi has strong support from the quote-unquote establishment of Jacksonville, a lot of the business community and civic leadership. On the other hand, community groups and some teachers have protested some of these changes. So these types of changes can be polarizing for the community.
Yeah, those changes can be polarizing, but at some point, two things have to happen. First of all, you have to have a tone where you are considering what the community wants and community traditions. But on the other hand, the community also has to try to look at what the bottom line is, and they have to be realistic. If it's causing a problem with, you know, students leaving, then I don't know how saving certain schools like Jackson, which is underutilized, how does that serve the overall mission of educating kids and the and overall mission of educating kids in that particular community, which is, you know, it's a real struggle. I mean, Dr. Vitti said we're dying on the vine. He's a guy who's looking at the hard statistics. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who's looking at what underutilization is doing to the schools and how it's affecting education overall in Duval County. And that's what they brought him in to do, and that's his job. But on the other hand, you know, how do you navigate that? How do you navigate that and tie it in with community interests and the whole issue of how these communities with virtually not enough economic development, you know, not anything else that they have going for them, identify very strongly with these schools as part of them. And, you know, they've over the years, they've seen Gilbert High School become a middle school. They've seen so many schools change. And it's like the communities around, the missions of those schools change, the communities around them, things just deteriorated even further. So, yeah, he's dealing with some tough history and, you know, and a tougher, even tougher reality.
And yeah. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. The number to join the show is 549-2937. Maybe this will generate more calls. Give us a call and let us know if you like Uber or Lyft. Discuss. Yeah. Also making headlines, I think they're like Hertz and Avis. I don't know. Also making headlines this week, Florida taxi companies are suing the state. They want more regulation on ride-sharing apps like Uber and Lyft. The taxi companies are saying more insurance protection needs to be established. Governor Rick Scott this week saying there does need to be some sort of statewide standard for Uber and Lyft. AG Gankarski, here in Jacksonville, we were the first Florida market to see these ride-sharing companies come in and tussle with the taxi cab companies.
Right, and the taxi cab companies are a very powerful lobby, very active in politics. Lyft actually has a lobbyist in the form of Steve Debanel, who's one of the top city hall lobbyists. So these clashes are ongoing. And, you know, looking at the lawsuit on its face, despite the fact that it's 96 pages, it's kind of a spurious lawsuit. I heard a news story about it and talking about how somebody in Brooklyn, New York was overcharged because of some glitch in the GPS. Yeah, that's a cautionary tale. But, you know, what's really being obscured here is the fact that the taxi cab model is a 20th century model. You know, you call up somebody, maybe they come in 30, 45 minutes, whatever, you know, versus Uber or Lyft, where if you hit it up on your app, you got them there in 5 to 7 minutes. That's the reality. Taxi cabs need to be taking a page out of Uber's book rather than trying to, you know, squash Uber, you know, and basically obstruct competition, because taxi cabs are, you know, basically as obsolete as rickshaws at this point. You know, that's what the real story here is, and that's what nobody is really saying.
Matt Shaw.
I think in bigger cities, this is, or more compact cities, this is a more complex problem and a more complex battle. But here in Jacksonville, it seems like we do have a void that could be filled by a Lyft or Uber. I think it's still pretty hard to get those services here. I've used them before, and they're, you know, sometimes you can look at the map and they're 15, 20 minutes away still.
You got to wait a little time. Well, we're such a spread out area.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. In bigger cities, these taxi companies, you have a lot of people working, and they've jumped through a lot of hoops to get their permitting and the licenses and paid the fees and stuff. And then you have some part-time person who just downloads an app on their phone. And then they can.
It's a disruptor. In the same way we were talking a minute ago, Tanya, about Nicolai Vitti being a disruptor. That's what Uber and Lyft is for this business model.
In this society that we're living in now, it's all about technological disruption. I think at some point we're just going to have to get used to it. I mean, we're experiencing that in the news industry with, you know, digital, all those things. We have all this disruption going on, and so we're going to have to figure out a way to accommodate, for lack of a better word, accommodate it. Taxi, I agree with a lot of what AG said, and I agree with a lot of what this young fellow here said about about you know, just about, you know, this whole situation where the taxi cab drivers, you know, have gone through a lot to get their license and things, and then you have somebody who just downloaded the app. But the reason why you can't write up, the reason why having something like that is important, especially in Jacksonville, is because we have a transportation problem. Sometimes people can't get the jobs. They can't afford, the bus doesn't run, you know, in the time they needed to run. They can't get a cab in time. You know, Uber or Lyft person may be cheaper. So, you know, we're in a city, at least for Jacksonville and probably in a lot of other Florida cities, where you don't need fewer options. You don't need... You need more options than fewer options.
And if you're just tuning in, whether it's Uber and Lyft, the Duval County Public Schools, or whatever news stories on your mind, give us a call right now, 549-2937. Tina is in Duval County. Hi, Tina. Good morning. Happy Friday.
How are you?
Good,
happy
thanks.
Happy Friday.
Yeah.
I just kind of wanted to chime in on your discussion about some of the complexities of the Duval County educational system and why we're not potentially getting the results, the outcome that we seek when there's so many resources and so much information and knowledge out there. I really like what Tanya mentioned. I followed Tanya's writing pretty much my entire, you know, growing up years and into my adult years. She's amazing, and she's a wonderful writer, and she has a way of conveying, you know, the message to the reader in such a way that it, you know, we can relate to it on a local level. One of the things that I noticed as a business person that's trying to work on revitalization and revamp of the Eastside Springfield community is the lack of participation from a lot of the business community. When you start talking about, you know, what's important to parents, education is at the top of the list. And economics is right there beside it, I would say, side by side. So when you create an environment of wonderful education, you create economics, because the parents then, they buy into it. They buy into living in that community because the community is offering education, you know, top-tier education to their kids. I myself, you know, we relocated our family from Jacksonville into St. John's County because we have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and education had a huge impact on us making that decision. I have a business, and I run my business in St. John's County and also in Duval County, and I also grew up on the north side. So I was that person in the 70s that attended Episcopal. There was Episcopal over on Pearl Street when I was a kid. And so, but when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, and I was brought up by my grandparents, the entire Main Street was commerce. There was movement.
Okay.
There were people. Yeah. There was mom and pop. You don't see that anymore. You see
right.
life. You know, you don't see movement. You don't see enough of the community sort of vested in economics there. Why is that? I don't have an answer to that, but why is that?
Sure.
So
yeah.
A lot of these questions need to be answered, but the top tier, education and economics, follow each other. The other thing is, I think...
Okay, Tina. Yeah, Tina, I'm sorry to cut you off. I appreciate all your comments. We just got to get a few more callers on. Thanks, Tina. That's Tina in Duval County. Bob in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I just retired from working at Stanton for 30 years. I started there in 1985, shortly after it became a magnet school. And it was a school to just avoid the 6th and 7th grade centers that the county had created back then. And then, of course, we became successful. And as soon as we became successful, the county, the superintendent at the time, said, oh, well, let's just make another school like Stanton. Let's, you know, welcome Paxson, which really, you know, if you want to look at national numbers, never really came all the way up to what Stanton is. And, you know, then the point I'm trying to make is there was a lot of complaints from the education leaders back in those days when all the best students wanted to leave their neighborhood schools and come to Stanton, and that was understood. You know, that's not a fair thing to do, is to cream off the top. But instead of bolstering the neighborhood schools, what they started doing was dismantling them and creating magnet schools and saying everything, like, instead of trying to duplicate the success of Stanton, that they're trying to make everyone a magnet school, take away the community flavor of a comprehensive school where you have home ec and you have shop, you have military, you have college, you have AC.
Yeah.
You can have everything at the neighborhood school, and people would then could bring back a sense of community if everyone in the community
community had something at their comprehensive.
Thanks, Bob. And we're kind of losing the connection. But what, you know, in recent years, Tanya, there's been a discussion about this alleged two-tiered educational system in Jacksonville.
Yeah, there has been a discussion about that. And not long ago, I guess it was maybe a few months ago, I spoke with Dr. Vitti on the phone, and we had a discussion about how it's important to kind of change that in terms of bringing back vocational education, because a long time ago, one of the reasons why they toned down vocational education was because they thought it was a way to herd students into, we put everything into the college, put everybody in a college track, and everybody doesn't necessarily need to go to college. And they did this because they felt that vocational education was a way of herding kids who they didn't want to help achieve a college level into something that was lower tiered. And now we're finding out that that's not the case, that with the STEM fields and in the more technological society that we have, we do need vocational education. People have to, we need people who can repair computers and can repair these different things that we're now coming out with. So now people are realizing, you know, and we always say hindsight is 20/20.
Sure.
That two-tiered thing right now is not a good fit, and it's a mistake. But unfortunately, we have designed our whole system around that with the college magnets and all those things. And now a lot of people, kids in those communities, aren't getting to go to those schools either. So it's now more of a sense of isolation from the schools and the communities. And that's another concern of people, that's changed the character of the communities.
Well, we do need to make a note of a couple of other stories that drew our attention this week. Governor Scott calling for more regulation around Uber and Lyft. He also this week, AG and Matt, called for better funding and a streamlining of services around Florida when it comes to dealing with mental health. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, this is a long time coming, and it's good that the governor is showing leadership as he gets ready to run for the Senate.
You know, gee, that's interesting timing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, really, Rick Scott sees a budget surplus, and it's a good way to use it. And, you know, honestly, we talked about this throughout the mayoral campaign, sheriff campaign. Ball County Jail is the number one mental health provider in the city. That's not an efficient model. It's not efficient for development. It's not efficient for dealing with the homeless population, you know, dealing with other people who, you know, have like profound issues that just can't be remedied, you know, by essentially spot cleaning. So, you know, a comprehensive revamp of the way our state deals with mental health issues is definitely necessary.
Matt Shaw.
Sure. Mental health, I think there's sort of a budding awareness of the complications around mental health across the country right now. And I think Governor Scott is responding to a lot of criticism that, I mean, he vetoed, I think, just under $100,000, but in his last budget, he vetoed money for mental health services that would work with people who are recently incarcerated to keep them in touch with their mental health services when they get out. But I think this is just a problem that politicians in general, and especially conservative politicians, don't want to deal with, because it doesn't have a free market, easy fix. It's not something that can be tackled with free market economics. It's something that's going to take investment from government.
Tanya.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Matt Shaw about
who's that?
He's the new guy.
Yeah, the new folio editor. Congratulations. But anyhow, I agree with Matt Shaw about that. I think that and AG. I think that this is a long time in coming. And I think you do have a point that it may be a long time. It may have been so long in coming because there doesn't appear to be a free market solution to all of this. And I'm almost wondering, you know, whether or not all of this is coming at a time where somebody's maybe looking at a free market solution, which there is none, but maybe somebody's looking at that. I don't see it, but
I'm
a little baffled here.
There's discussion in the city of Jacksonville. We had a topic on the show the other day about a central receiving facility in Jacksonville to process people through so that they don't go through the jail if they're dealing with a substance abuse issue or a mental health problem. And let's go now to Bobby on the north side. Hi, Bobby. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thank you for picking me up. I'll cover all three subjects. I'll start with Governor Scott. And you can tell he's lying with his mouth moving. On the Uber, you know, if we want a level playing field, we need to take the hands off the taxi services, because they're required to have, you know, a sticker, medallion, you know, meters. Uber doesn't have any of that. They've run into problems almost everywhere they've gone. they're now being sued by employees, you know, because of their labor practices. So it's not a level playing field. You know, if we're going to let Uber, you know, bypass all the rules, we need to let the traditional companies do the same thing. And on the education side, I'm a 1973 graduate from Raines. We had all social stratas in that school. You had your achievers, you had your average people, you had your underachievers. You saw a pathway within your school where your demographics showed that African-American people were just as intelligent as anybody else. And when you had the magnet program, it cherry picks all your best students, and it leaves perception that people are there, but look, I'm on a dead end street here, you know. And going back to the legislature, as a recent convert to the Democratic Party and having been a Republican for over 30 years, I find it fascinating when they have both sides of the House, they can't get along with each other. They can't pass anything. They can't pass a budget. They can't do redistricting. How are they going to blame the Democrats for that?
Thanks, Bobby. That's Bobby on the North Side. A.G. Gankarski.
Well, where to begin with that?
He covered a lot of ground in that call.
Yeah, he certainly did.
He's listening very closely. Thanks for that, Bobby.
I did want to get back to something he said regarding the schools and the magnet programs. The fact is, if you're a gifted kid in a normal high school, chances are you're dealing with social pressures. You're being called a Poindexter or a nerd or whatever, dealing with people who are lower achievers, basically trying to intimidate you for being the high achiever in the class. That's why magnet programs are essential, because they allow people with artistic bents or intellectual bents to basically flower and succeed in the way that they might not in a neighborhood school. It's great to have them as inspirational figures, but let's not have the sepia-tinged, you know, reminiscence of what school actually is. I mean, school is actually a reinforcement of hierarchy. And, you know, if you go to a school and you're basically somebody who is bookish and you're a foot shorter than the other people in the class, you're not a role model, you're a target.
Right. I'm learning a lot about you this morning.
I'm just saying what I've seen, I've heard.
I know. And as always, I can't stress enough how much I value you being on this program, all of you.
Yeah.
Because it's always a great discussion. Now, we want to make mention of one other item. State Attorney Angela Corey announced Thursday that her office has received nearly $2 million in a federal grant to eliminate more than 1,000 rape kits or sexual assault test kits that have just been sitting on shelves at the JSO. Attorney General Pam Bondi is also pledging to eliminate this backlog all over the state. Matt Shaw, this is welcome news.
Yeah, I think the estimate was somewhere just south of that amount, $2 million that JSO would need to test all these kits. So that's good news, but it's also interesting seeing as how JSO's budget is around $400 million, and that this was not a priority before. It speaks a lot to the way that society or the JSO kind of views rape as opposed to other violent crime.
Well, what do you think about this, Tanya? This backlog is now being cleared only because of a federal grant, it looks like, which is great, but at the same time, about his comments?
I'm agreeing with what Matt is saying. I mean, it's great that we have a federal grant to clear the backlog, but I have to ask the question, why wasn't that a priority before? I mean, why hadn't anybody stepped up before and said anything about that? having a rape kit sitting on the shelves for that long? I mean, women who, you know, it's like they're being victimized another time,
right?
You know, to me, that's more victimization right there, especially it seemed like it wasn't, a priority. I don't know what the entire story is with that, but right on his face, I just say it's kind of an outrage, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and the Joyful Heart Foundation is a national group that has a goal of eliminating a huge national backlog. Many states have been exposed for keeping these mass backlogs. Florida's not alone in this. So
sure,
it is important to point that out.
Exactly. But Duval County, if you look at the numbers, Duval County has one of the highest rates of forcible rape in the entire state, and one of the highest probably in the country as well. So, and it's actually risen in the last couple of years. And, you know, these are alarming numbers, and it doesn't seem like it's been on JSO or the state attorney's office radar until you know, Joyful Heart got involved, and then mm-hmm. you know, Foley has done some stories. Plug.
Right. NAG.
Yeah, and really, there's a political ramification to this also. Wes White, who's been on this program a couple times, I believe, running for state attorney against Angela Corey, held a press conference calling attention to you know, the untested rape kits. This takes an issue off the table for him as he tries to build up momentum during his campaign. And you can get back to your organizational priorities issue at JSO. I mean, yeah, conceivably they could have found the money in the budget, but this gets back to a larger organizational issue, JSO. People running for sheriff, everybody except for Mike Williams basically, said that it was top heavy, too much money spent on administrative cost, too many you know, chiefs, not enough Indians, and so on.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is really something that it comes back to. You know, JSO going forward, you know, needs to look at, you know, how to make sure they don't need a federal grant to deal with this next time.
Well, finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from of the week around the state. Luckily, there's never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida. Only in Florida do iguanas clog up your toilet. This happens a lot, by the way. Down in Hollywood, homeowner Peppy Tandacetti says she found an iguana in the toilet bowl Monday. She recorded video of the creature hanging out in the bathroom. A few seconds later, it crawled out and walked out the door. Animal experts say the iguana climbed in through a roof vent, and when it got stuck, it looked for the largest possible opening to escape, which happened to be the toilet. Makes perfect sense, right?
Untidy.
apparently, you need to use netting to cover your vents, according to this homeowner, so you don't get an iguana invasion.
Need netting to cover your toilet.
Yeah, maybe close that lid. Yeah.
Only in Florida do people demand that police deputies take a hurt feelings report. Cops were called after two Bradenton women called each other some mean names, police say. Both parties demanded a report documenting the hurt feelings. The deputy had to advise them that no crime had occurred.
We called that playing the dozens where I grew up.
And finally, only in Florida do would-be burglars tell police they didn't break into a house. They were invited in to have some Gatorade.
Electrolytes.
Oh, Manatee County County authorities say 26-year-old Stephen Haynes faces charges after a woman came home to find him robbing the place. Despite being caught red-handed, Haynes insisted he was only there to cool off with the refreshing Florida-made beverage.
50 calories, less than soda, more refreshing.
Lots of flavors.
Yeah, it gives you energy to burglarize again.
Well, you think the judge will buy that? You go to court.
We need Bobcat here.
He's on his way. Thanks to our media panel, Matt Shaw, Tanya Weathersby, and A.G. Gankarski. Guys, you always make it so, so great. Thank you, and have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Go, Jack.
We'll be right back.
WJCT's Summer Sizzle Auction is where you'll find exciting items starting at up to 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. Bid now. The auction continues through September 14th at 9 p.m. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information. Bid high and bid often.
Relax Radio is easy listening with an edge.
And I love the fact that I can hear 1 minute Ella Fitzgerald singing, you know, some torchy number, and then I will hear something Van Morrison.
Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information. Hey, where did we go?
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, you don't think of our sunny Jacksonville beaches as the type of place to celebrate the Iditarod. That's Alaska's famous 1,000-mile dog sled race. But this weekend, the Beaches Museum and History Park is hosting a free public event on the last great race on Earth. Now, this will feature renowned Iditarod musher Jason Mackey of Fairbanks, Alaska. Mackey, a member of the famous Mackey family of Iditarod champions, has come to town all the way from the Great White North, and he's here in studio now. Good morning, Jason Mackey. Good to meet you.
Good morning. Thank you.
I have never met an actual musher in my life. I'm fascinated by this. Well, you were an Iditarod champion. That is just the coolest thing ever.
Actually, myself, I am not a champion.
You are not?
I come from a family of champions. I'm the only Mackey boy to not have won the Iditarod yet.
Not yet?
Yet.
Oh, keywords. So that's a goal. That's on your list.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so how did your family get into this?
My dad was a co-founder of the Iditarod, and him and his best friend, Joe Reddington Sr., started the race.
Uh-huh.
And since 73, it's what we do. It's just like...
It's a family business.
It's family business. My brothers and I all have our own kennels.
Yeah. Yeah, you do this all year round.
It's 365, 24/7. So I'm very fortunate to have met Lynn and Charlie Martin from Florida here that came to watch the Iditarod a couple years ago, met myself and my family, have been supporters of us since, and invited us down and to do this fundraiser deal.
At the Beaches Museum. And in fact, last year in the 2014 Iditarod, you actually carried the ashes of a young man who was a fan of the race. Is that right?
That's correct. 2 years ago, so last year and the previous year, I carried his ashes. He was from here, Florida. His mother still resides here, I think. And yeah, it's kind of a whole story in itself, but... he's my angel. I've carried his ashes 2 years in a row, like I said, and he helps me through the tough times.
And I wanted to ask you about that. It's a 1,000-mile dog sled race. There had to have been some challenging moments during all the years you've run it.
This will be my sixth year of running it, and yes, there are many tough... 2 years ago, there was no snow, if you could imagine that. No snow for 1,000 miles in Alaska.
What'd you guys do?
We went.
You just did it anyway.
And it was the wildest. It is amazing to be able to say that we made it.
How did you do it without snow? How do you?
We still had our sleds, and the dogs fared very good through it.
Mm-hmm.
They had great footing. We had no basically control of our sleds at times. Just hang on, white knuckle ride.
Have you ever had an accident? Have you ever been hurt?
Not beyond repair.
You're still in one piece.
I've had some wipeouts. I think everybody has, but for the most part, you fare through anything.
Sure, sure.
And that specific year, when I say that Troy is my angel, there was times of how could we physically do this? And pretty sure he's the reason
I
made
it.
I did.
And
him and I have a relationship. He rides on my four-wheeler still today through the dry land training. And he's got a lot of miles on him.
Now, I know you probably get asked this a lot, but have you run the race with Sarah and Todd Palin? Isn't Todd Palin an Iditarod guy?
He is an Iron Dog guy.
It's a different race.
Yeah. It's a 1,000-mile, 2,000-mile snow machine race.
Oh, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
So I'm mixing up my Alaska races. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, but you're up in a part of the world that down here in Florida is so different for all of us to even comprehend. It's so outdoorsy. It's rugged. You know, there's a real fascination for that, don't you think, for people that don't live in your part of the world?
Absolutely. But I think yesterday was the first time I've ever stepped on a sandy beach.
Get out of here.
In my entire life. We have beaches, but they're inlet beaches. So the water is 34 degrees, and you can't swim in it, of course.
You've never been to a warm weather beach before?
No, ma'am. This is my first time.
What did you think of it?
I'm ready to go back. I love it. I had an absolute blast. I was like a little kid in the water.
Oh, you did some. Yeah. So you splashed around in our warm Florida ocean.
I couldn't believe that I was actually swimming in an ocean. That was warm.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think you guys you're blessed to have what you have, and we're blessed to have what we have. So, but I believe that everybody should see warm sandy beaches. Uh-huh. And I believe that everybody should come to Alaska and see what we have to offer, too.
Hey, and I know this doesn't have to do with the Iditarod, but what did you think about the renaming of Denali from Mount McKinley up in Alaska?
You know, I just heard that, and
yeah,
I can't believe that he actually has the power to rename the mountain.
Did you think it should stay McKinley?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
So not everyone in Alaska is on the same page on that one, huh?
No, I don't know about how they feel, but...
Yeah.
That's Mount McKinley.
Yeah, interesting.
Denali is Denali National Park.
Oh, okay.
So,
interesting.
You know, that would be like changing the name of Jack's Beach.
Right. Well, so let me ask you this, because tomorrow is a free event, but any funds raised will go toward your 2016 race expenses, because it costs a lot to run the Iditarod, doesn't it?
That's correct. You know, I say... It cost about between $20,000 and $30,000 a year to race the Iditarod, and so yes, it's a very expensive sport, and the proceeds will go towards this year's Iditarod. Yes,
which you're going to win. This is the year. Yeah.
You know, my dad and two of my older brothers, Lance and Rick, both won it. All three of them won their sixth attempt, wearing bib 13. This is my sixth attempt.
This is it.
So pressure's on.
Oh, I'm gonna look it up and see who won, and then I can tell everyone I met the Iditarod winner.
Well, you should come see it.
He is Iditarod musher Jason Mackey of Fairbanks, Alaska. You need to come on out tomorrow to the Beaches Museum in Jacksonville Beach, tomorrow from 2 to 4. A free meet and greet to learn all about the Iditarod. Just an incredible event, and so exciting to meet you, and best of luck. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful.
And keep listening. Bob Cat Goldthwaite is up next.
On the next Fresh Air, singer, songwriter, and musician John Darnielle, founder of the band The Mountain Goats. His songs tell stories, and his novel, Wolf and White Van, has just come out in paperback. We'll talk about his work and his life. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Join WJCT for a dinner honoring this year's American Graduate Champions, Wednesday, September 30th, 6 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Hear their stories and learn how their efforts are making a difference in increasing graduation rates here on the First Coast. For more information and tickets, 358-6327, WJCT.org.
Well, finally, this hour, from a renowned career in stand-up to recent work as a talented writer, director, comedian, Bobcat Goldthwaite is a multifaceted entertainer, and you're in luck because he's in town this weekend at the Comedy Club of Jacksonville, and he joins us now in studio. Bobcat Goldthwaite, a pleasure.
It's so good to meet you.
Yeah,
thank
good to
you.
Meet you. I've been a fan for years. It's exciting to meet you in person. I'm a fangirl here.
I will crush that right out of you. I met him kind of a jerk.
No.
He was very aloof.
They always say never meet the people you look up to because you're always disappointed. But no, you seem delightful.
So far, that's a lot of pressure.
No.
You don't look up to me. You just were a fan.
A fan, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Because, you know.
You don't like.
Now, I have to ask
what would Bobcat do?
I have to ask you this right away. You said, you told Folio Weekly that you're excited to come to Florida because you see it as this interesting experiment gone awry.
Yeah, actually, I wouldn't even say awry. I would say it didn't work. I think I was being polite there.
It didn't work?
Yeah.
It's just a hideous failure on all fronts.
No, but, you know, I like calamity, so I love it here. I've actually been, you know, I've been playing Florida for years. I think I've been through 2 hurricanes here, like
really?
at a club where you end up, the club gets closed down and the.
Oh, you didn't get to do your act.
Yeah, well, I still want. I did. I was. I'm going around with candles, like you know.
Oh, you did it anyway.
Yeah. Because I was going to get paid.
Hey, you got to get paid one way or another.
I remember seeing in Tampa, one of the strangest things I've ever saw was people were relocating. Yeah, I mean, so there was people, there was a supermarket that had been closed down and they were supplying water and food for people. And there was a line out the door. And there was 2 homeless guys sitting on a fountain looking at the people, and they were mocking them. They're like, I lost my home.
I
really did see that. It was one of the greatest things I ever witnessed. They were being heckled by a homeless guy.
Have you seen anything since you got to Jacksonville that will make it into your act
No,
tonight?
I mean, I just got in. Last night, I have a documentary called Call Me Lucky, and
yes,
it's playing.
Yes, very well received, by the way.
It's critically acclaimed.
Yes.
And it's at the Sunray Cinema this weekend.
Right.
Or actually for the whole week. So, yeah. So folks.
Yeah, so go see that at Sunray, but then you'll be on stage tonight and tomorrow at the Comedy Club. And your stand-up has kind of evolved over the years, hasn't it?
I guess. You know, it's evolved or maybe my memory's gone. You know?
One or the other.
Yeah, so it's like, I think it's good. So folks go see Call Me Lucky. Then they come to the comedy show, they can get cheered up. Because Call Me Lucky, although it is funny and entertaining and uplifting, it is a very heavy, heavy doc. You know, it's about political satirist Barry Crimmins, who's a mentor of mine, a buddy I've known for years. You know, folks who aren't familiar with Barry, my favorite Barry joke is people say if you don't love America, why don't you leave it? And Barry says, because I don't want to be victimized by its foreign policies.
So that's his basic worldview.
He's a very sharp guy. Yeah. And then I made a movie. Are we getting the wind up? You're looking out of the corner of your eye.
No. He's just laughing. Sean is just laughing hysterically.
I don't trust Sean. I don't like the cut of his jib.
Uh oh. That you're just making him laugh harder. He's the kind of guy that just makes him laugh harder.
I'm telling you, he wants your job. He's gonna all about Eve you.
I wouldn't surprise me, actually. Not at all. Now, let me ask you, because a lot of people might not realize that in addition to your movies, your writing, your stand-up, you're a director. You've directed Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, I directed Kimmel
other
for,
shows.
Yeah, I did Kimmel for 3 years. I just did Mark Maron's new special, and I direct his TV show or some of his television show, yeah.
What was that like for you?
It's weird, you know, to work with Maron because, you know... I don't know if you're familiar with Mark, but his podcast
WTF.
Yeah, and that is him. It's not like it's not like so we're old friends, and it's strange, you know, that's weird.
My husband's a huge fan of Crank Yankers.
Oh wow.
You worked on Crank Yankers.
Yeah, I worked on it, and I did voices on Crank Yankers. But I would direct puppets.
Did you do special ed?
No.
Because that's probably our favorite character.
Well, that's Jim Florentine.
Yeah. Which voices did you do? I
did a stretch on that show. I played Bobcat Goldthwait.
That's right. You played yourself, yeah.
I would go a different direction. Yeah. Although, funny enough, that really wasn't me. So that's kind of funny.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Like, who were your voices?
Yeah, I did do, I was me making crank calls. But then I did do, like, when you'd watch the show, I directed a lot of the actual puppets.
You've worked with Chappelle. You've worked with like all of the comics of your era. You're with this group of guys that have, I don't know, like you've made a unique impact, and you came up at a specific time, you know. And then you've all kind of branched out and done these really interesting things.
Like I guess Dave and Maron and myself, you know, definitely have a second act to our careers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so. Yeah, which is good, you know. I mean, the other choice is just to be a nostalgia act, which I would find very depressing, you know, if it was, you know, I'd rather be doing boat shows with David Hasselhoff if I was just signing autographs as the guy from Police Academy.
How did you figure out your second act? How did you
It was
of...
weird. It wasn't like, you know, I retired from acting the same time they stopped hiring me, so that worked out really
well. It worked
out
nicely.
Yeah, it was good. I didn't, it wasn't like a plan B. I found myself directing stuff, making shorts and things, and it really is what I'm passionate about. You know, I think sometimes people that are known for other, as an actor or comedian, and then they end up in behind the scenes, it is a plan B. But for me, it's I'm very passionate. I make a movie about every year and a half. You know,
what do you like doing the best? Movies or comedy, or you like it all?
I would say that making the movies is new to me. I started doing stand-up when I was 16. I got on Letterman when I was 20.
Right.
And I'm 53 now. So telling stories that are a little bit longer than 2 minute or a minute long is challenging.
But you're enjoying that. Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, you know, and it's all kinds of stuff. You know, I did a documentary, and before that I did a scary Bigfoot movie. Before that I did a violent crime spree comedy, you know.
You've done it all. I mean, it's so exciting to meet you, and it's a really cool opportunity to go see you live tonight and tomorrow night at the Comedy Club of Jacksonville. That's the one on Beach Boulevard. Tonight and tomorrow, go to jacksonvillecomedy.com for tickets. Bobcat Goldthwait, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you.
So good to meet you. Have a great time this weekend. And I know you'll pick up some new material from our calamitous state.
I'm sure I will, yes.
And that's our show. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross, and Diane Reams up next. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.